If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine light, love, and presence of the One Divine Spirit. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. Our seminar topic this evening is, You Are Awareness, Witnessing Life. You are awareness, witnessing life. I'll bet if anyone asks you, who are you, you've never in your whole life ever said, I am awareness. Unless, of course, you have. I hope you have. Anyway, let's take a deep breath and come into some integrated presence here tonight. So take a deep breath and call and evoke your higher principles, your spirit, your soul, your awakened higher mind, to come down and to merge and move through your lower human mind, your emotions, and down through your nervous system into your physical body. And just allow that awareness that you're here now, you're present, you are aware of this moment. And you can turn that awareness and be aware of the energy as it begins to align and adjust your body so that there's a congruency between who you truly are and your time-space appearing hologram that you're used to walking around in this dimension and thinking of as yourself. However, that who you truly are can't change. That's the giveaway here. That's the clue that lets you know it's not real. Oh, it's a temporary appearance. But it's not who you are, because who you are cannot change in the sense of dissipate, dissolve, die, so forth and so on. Only illusions have that temporary illusory appearance that we call death. Because only truth has eternal life. And you are the very embodiment of divine truth. Or Sat-Chit-Ananda, which is being or eternal life, awareness, and bliss. That is your true identity, being, awareness, bliss. Anything else is an add-on. It's a misperception that you have temporarily bought into, but as you move deeper into your divine awareness, those things will just dissipate and fall away. You don't have to do anything about them, but awaken and deepen your awareness of that which is. What is that which is? That which you are, eternally, one with all that is. So your awareness grows as you do spiritually. In fact, you could think of awareness in this metaphor. Awareness within the milk of consciousness. Awareness would be the cream that rises to the top. And the rising of awareness to the top of consciousness requires churning. And the churning is that evocative process that our inquiry, our passion to know who we are, that imperative that the soul has to be free, and that deeper part of ourselves that is now taking charge and command of everyone listening to this, these weekly seminars. Because that's what we're all about. Calling you forward in your divine beingness as an awakening Christed one. So what is awareness? It is God. Awareness is you operating at a spiritual level. And you could also refer to awareness as an ever-expanding radius of what you can consciously register and know at any given time. That's where the exponential advancing and expanding of divine awareness comes in. Because you can only grow into your next step. And that's an active movement of your spiritual inner awareness. That's that churning part. You have to move beyond the current levels of awareness to evoke and call forward a deeper level and a greater expansion of awareness. Now, most people are simply not aware at all. They are automatically reactive out of mental and emotional states that they have bought into at previous times. And those are all unconscious levels that are completely devoid of awareness. Even though people think they're aware, they're not. They're not even seeing who they are when they look in the mirror. They're seeing a thought-projected image of what they think they are. So the mind, the emotions, the subconscious are not aware. All of these levels operate out of prior conditioning and are essentially illusory. Now, they're experiential, and as such, they're educational. And the soul is here for education. It is here for experience. It is here to expand its awareness, even down into the deepest density of what we call the third-dimensional physical level. The soul has an intention toward awakening light in the deepest density of universal creation. That's the intention of the soul. The soul is the light itself. So Sai Baba has stated that all states but Ananda, or divine bliss, are entirely imaginary. Wow. Well, you see, the good news here is that there's an awful lot of stuff we worry about, think about, emote about, despair about, that we really, really don't need to pay any attention to at all, other than to say, well, it's simply not real. May look real, may feel real, may require some acting out that would seem to be real and addressing it. But bottom line, it's imaginary. So awareness is bliss. Awareness, or Ananda, as it's called in Sanskrit, is that state when you're functioning out of divine awareness completely. Those of you that are on a path of soul transcendence or self-realization or self-actualization, these are all terms for awakening to the bliss that you are. So what is Ananda? Well, Ananda is the absence of attachment and desire. Ananda is what is present. When that driving, whatever it is, the ego mind and its agendas, finally gives up and collapses under the weight of the relentless repetition of God's name as you do your spiritual exercises, as you meditate, as you chant mantra, as you devote your day, every day to God, to being an instrument of God, to being God's presence in this world. All of these things are acts of spiritual practice that burn away that accumulated glob of desire that we call the mind. The mind is composed entirely of the warp and woof of desire and thinking about the things that you think you lack. Our last seminar, we spoke about how everything that you desire is already yours eternally. Everything that you could ever want is already yours. And the only thing that's preventing you from the experiencing of that is your thinking that you don't have it. It's your desiring towards it which actually pushes it away. Whenever you desire something, you're in effect sending the message to the universe of lack. And the universe simply responds by giving you more lack. Because you're creative. You are never ignored by the universe because you are the uniquely extended love, consciousness, Son of God. And so the very universe will bend over backwards and rearrange itself entirely to accommodate the energies that you are putting out towards it, which it interprets as your desire. It's so interesting. Very often you'll find that when you've been banging on the door, demanding against something, desiring something, pushing, trying to make something happen, and finally you back off and you say, oh, to heck with it, that very thing suddenly comes and sits in your lap when you give up that imperative, which actually pushes it away. So it's an interesting exercise of consciousness, because when you act from your wholeness, even if it's a charade initially, you're acting from the end result, or as the Bible would say, you're acting as if through faith, even when there's no evidence of it in the outer world to support your acting in faith. That's what faith is all about. It's acting as if it already was given you, even when there's no sign of its presence. And that acting as if is what evokes it to manifestation. So, it's a very specific science of consciousness that we're speaking of here. Very definite science of higher spiritual law that we are learning to tap into. So just note this in your notebook if you're taking notes. That desire towards something pushes it away. And accepting that you've already been given it, and then looking for evidence of it, begins that process of evoking it out of the unmanifest into your manifest reality. One of the ways we can do that is to begin to trust that we always have at hand whatever we truly need. I have used this principle my whole life, traveling all around the world, but mostly back and forth to India to be with Sai Baba, and never had a lot of money. You know, always was very pinched in terms of, you know, what I felt I had. You know, it's a little scary to be alone in a foreign country, where you don't have very much money. You know, as a Westerner, we're used to a certain standard of life. We can't just, like, morph into the culture, although I certainly did in my younger years. You know, there's a certain level of life that you're used to, that you kind of need to have around you to keep your health intact. At least that was the thinking in those years. But what I learned by operating out of this principle, and it comes from the Bible, sufficient unto the day, actually in the Bible it's are the troubles thereof, but I upgraded it a little bit, sufficient unto the day is the substance thereof, whatever it is I need. And I wedded that with the statement of Jesus where he said, behold, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Well, there's no lack in the kingdom of heaven. And if it's at hand, that means you can reach out and take it into your hands. That means it's in your immediate environment. So I used to affirm, sufficient unto the day are the rupees thereof. You know what? It worked. Or whatever it was I needed. I simply affirmed that I couldn't possibly have a need that God hadn't already foreseen and handled, whether or not I was aware of it. And this is an adaptation of the sixth chapter of Matthew, where Jesus goes in to consider the lilies of the field. You know, they're not working, they're not toiling, and yet look how beautifully they're dressed. And the birds, they sing and they offer their bird song, but, you know, God takes care of them, makes certain that they have everything they need. They're not worrying or working or toiling. So how much more are you? So don't worry about these things of the material world. Your Father knows exactly what you need. The Father is your divine awareness. That's that part of you that's forever one with God. Inside you, lives inside you, breathes you, beats your heart. The very principle of life that is anchored in your heart and flows through your bloodstream, so that your blood is literally the blood of God, the blood of Christ. It gives you consciousness by being anchored in the center of your pineal and pituitary and hypothalamus in a trinitized alignment in your skull. That's what gives you consciousness. And then it anchors in the back of your throat, which gives you your ability to act. That's your Shakti, your Kriya Shakti, that enables you to move and do action. So God has given you life, consciousness, and the ability to move, to act. These are the evidences and the presence of the indwelling God force inside you that simply uses your physical body-mind vehicle as a way to communicate divine wisdom, divine love, divine awareness, divine everything that God would want to communicate on earth has to come through human instrumentality. You are the divine functionaries through which God works in this world. God, being a spirit, has no body but yours. You are the body of God. You are the body of Christ. The only time God takes form, and God does have to take a human form because we can't conceptualize God, apart from a human form, since we're in human form. So God has to come from age to age in a divine embodiment where the whole expression is divine. It doesn't have any shadow to it, no ego. It's a pure extension of divine awareness into time and space. And such a being is called an avatar, which means a divine coming down or appearing into this dimension from a higher world or plane of consciousness. And avatars can come from many, many different dimensions and levels and manifest different attributes. It's rare that we have a full avatar, and we have one now in the form of Satya Sai Baba. So you've had the divine physically incarnated on Earth since whenever it was Shirdi Sai Baba was born, 18-something or other, and left the body in 1917, I believe it was, came back as Satya Sai, or reappeared, I should say, as Satya Sai, and is now emanating as Prema Sai Baba. So these are three aspects manifesting of the divine in its full anchoring. That makes your present incarnation very, very different. This is the most valuable lifetime we have ever had, because the avatar has come, number one, to avert the crises that had come upon humanity. We were on a path of self-destruction that has been averted, to avert the possibility of a third world war. No matter how many sabers are rattled, the divine will is that there will not be a third world war, and to correct the intelligence principle in human minds, the ego mind, that has caused it to become so benighted and contrary and negative. That was such a mess that it took the divine creator himself to take embodiment to make that added, that little twerking, that little adjustment. And this avatar is doing it through speaking, through writing, through emanating the vibration throughout the collective, and through working internally with each person as their own spiritual inner awareness, their own God self, their own God presence. So it doesn't require focusing upon his outer form or its appearance or anything. That's, if it's helpful, fine, but it's not necessary, because you're simply speaking about divine love being available in a human vehicle. That is, it's your good karma and your dharma and your time to visit and see and interact with it physically. You can do so, but that's not necessary. That has a lot to do with things that are known only probably to God. The best we can do is know that whatever we need is at hand. If you need a master, the master appears. If you need to go and spend time in India on the ashram of Sai Baba, you can do that. There's all of these opportunities which become available to you. It's so interesting. If you're meant to go, a couple in New York City didn't have any money, and a little puff, those little dust devils that rise up like little miniature twisters at your feet. A little twister arose at their feet as they're walking down Broadway in New York City, and in it were floating the bills, the amount of money they needed to purchase their ticket to India. Another person had an apartment at Prashanti Nilayam in the ashram and a round-trip ticket to India, but for whatever reason was unable to use it and offered it to a person who she didn't even know. She just met this woman, and she said, I was told inwardly to give you this ticket to India, and you may stay in my apartment at Prashanti Nilayam. That's like a huge, huge, huge miracle. So this was an example of this person needing that particular experience, that particular facilitation, and it was at hand. So I want you to know that whatever you need is at hand, whatever you truly need. Not maybe to satisfy your desires and your wants and your wishes and your lacks and your kvetching because you don't have so much money for your employment and you don't have that mate that you want. Hey, trust. If you don't have a mate, if you haven't conceived a child, if you are in a job that really tests you to the nth degree, you need that exact experience. And when it's no longer needed, it will change, and whatever is for your highest and best good will come into your life next. If you can learn to trust the divine plan that's living through you as you, you can just come into peace with that. My goodness, you're going to enjoy a happier life. All of that worry and angst and stress and striving, that's when you're trying to do it out of your own ego. Let go and let God. Relax. Enjoy your life every day. So, what is Ananda? Ananda is when you have no longer any desires for the things of this world. And all of your desires is only to love and be loved. To love God and to love your fellow man. That's it. When you live in that state and all you're here to do is to love all and serve all, you're in bliss. You leave the driving to the Lord, you put him in the driver's seat, and you step back and you let him lead the way. And that's the way to live a divine life. So awareness, like illumination, which is illumination is awakening to the awareness that you are divine. So awareness is infinite, eternal, and open-ended. Awareness is actually the response of awakened light within you. You are the light. And when that light is awakened, you are aware. And what you become aware of is always divine. You begin to notice the good, the pure, the noteworthy, the beautiful things of life. That's what catches your attention. And you know when you're in that state that you are operating from that awakened light of awareness. It's a beautiful place to be. And you know what? You can move in and practice it and never leave it. You don't have to depart. That's what's so wonderful. So, what differentiates man from all other animals is self-awareness. Mankind is endowed with the ability to be aware of himself as an individual, to have individual choice, and also to be in conscious communion with the Creator, or his Creator, his inner self. So So man has the ability to make a conscious choice and thus to express self-determination. So we're not on automatic instinct, like most animals operate out of instinct. Some of them are evolving to the point that they're beginning to prepare themselves for incarnation, their first human incarnations, probably as a human basic self, but sometimes as a human. Sai Baba's elephant, Sai Gita, Baba said would incarnate as a woman devotee in her next incarnation. Guess she'll be with Prema Sai Baba. But there are certain animals, elephants being one of them, that are the incarnations just prior to the movement of that consciousness into a human embodiment. So when man is aware of himself only as a physical body, driven by sensations, you know, sensual desire and survival instincts and all of that, there's very little difference between that person and an animal, because animals also, they defend their territory, and they mate, and they eat, and they sleep, and they survive. So life at that level could not be called a human level. That is still the level of the brute, and it's basically totally unconscious. The next stage is when man identifies with his physical body and his mind. He's still not fully conscious. He's in a semi-conscious, sort of a sleep but dreaming state. And here he is functioning at the level of the ego, which is driven and consists of his previous conditioning and habits and desires. And the ego completely lacks conscious awareness. We've spoken about that a lot in our previous seminars. So when man functions at the level of the physical body, the mind, and the soul, he is a true human being. Now he is awakening and is starting to become conscious and aware. It's an in and out process. You know, sometimes the ego's there, sometimes the mind is there, sometimes the emotions take over, sometimes the karma runs them in, or the different levels of consciousness. But at some point, there's an integrated infusion or a marriage between the different levels of consciousness, and you become a fully soul-infused personality. And that is the true human being. Now, when man functions as a self-aware soul, that's the next level. You're departing now the human state, and you're beginning to move into the superhuman, divine states. And when you're in a self-aware soul state of consciousness, you have the knowledge that you're more than simply a body-mind complex. And at that point, you have awakened spiritually. And that state is referred to as self-realization or soul awareness. And it indicates a person who is conscious and aware of himself as a divine being and is able to live from that state all of the time. When a person can live at that state all of the time, or be in the world and not of the world, as I often speak of, that's a jivan mukta, or a person who has attained liberation even while they're still functioning in the world and in a human body. Now, when he transcends even that state of soul awareness and merges with his I Am presence or spirit, or what we call the monad, then he is God realized. And at that level, he has literally become one with the divine spirit, the Holy Spirit. And that gives life to all beings. So at that stage, he's literally God, and relates to everyone as embodiments of that one divinity that he identifies then with as his own self. That's the state that Sai Baba lives in. And that state of God realization or Brahma-jnana is very rare that an average jivi or an evolving individual experiences that state. Generally, it's a being who has come back from that state, like Sai Baba, as an avatar. That's usually where you see God realization. It's very rare to see it otherwise. And you know, I would have to say it's been rare up until now. However, I think with the externalization of the hierarchy that's taking place now, that we're going to see less and less disparity between the God-realized state and being able to function in the world like Sai Baba did. He certainly wasn't off in a cave. He's the first avatar in history that the common person, every kind of person, had direct access to, that wasn't hiding, that wasn't known to only a handful of people. I mean, many people throughout the world recognized him as God. So it wasn't just for a small handful, as it was in the case of the previous avatars. So generally, such individuals, such God-realized individuals, in the past used to live in some remote areas where maybe a few fortunate souls could sit in their presence and have their darshan, which is to see them physically, usually from a distance. And these are also known as the bodhisattvas. And a bodhisattva is a liberated soul that remains, instead of taking that full liberation, they remain on earth to assist others in attaining liberation. So that's the work. Once you have developed divine awareness, your work is to help other people attain the same state. And you'll notice with a Jivan Mukta, or a liberated soul, that's what they do. They're the ones that are writing and teaching and speaking, and their whole attention is helping you to awaken. They're not focused on their own spiritual development. They are thinking about how to help others. And in that process, whatever they need, again, is at hand. But they're no longer self-focused. They're not thinking about their personal self at all at that point. So when we take embodiment as a human being on earth, that is the supreme opportunity that Sai Baba has said only human birth on earth can provide. And this is the only planet, Baba said, that we can return to the highest God, state of Godhood, the highest God positive realm. Only in a human birth and upon earth. He was speaking, when he said that statement, he was speaking to Dr. John Hislop, a California man that was one of Baba's greatest Western devotees, I think. Very, very close to Baba. And he had that knack of asking questions we would all like to ask, but he had the presence of mind to be able to ask them for all of us. And that was what Sai Baba said. He said that the other beings in other worlds, on other planets, they have an unconscious kind of spawning mentality where they're on like a wave of consciousness that flows them back into divine states, but they have to take human birth at some point in order to be able to return and stay in those God realms and levels. So it seems that human birth on earth is for the purpose to awaken consciousness and expand awareness. And again, we could liken consciousness to the milk and awareness as the cream latent within the milk, but requires your conscious churning and participation, your spiritual exertion is required to bring awareness forward. So full godhood is the objective of human birth. We're not here to just be human. We are here to move from the human, from the animal human, to the fully human, to the superhuman, to the transhuman divine being that we truly are. And I think, personally, I believe that When we move into Brahmajnana, or God consciousness, that's just the springboard to a whole new program, a superluminal, hyper-dimensional program of divine expression and manifestation that we're all going to be co-participating in. So I think this is like the nursery or the green room in preparation for an even greater cosmic drama to take place. So human life, again, is very unusual because it spans all the five kingdoms of nature. That would be the mineral, the plant, the animal, the human, and the divine, the fifth dimension or the fifth kingdom or the fifth realm pertains to the realm of soul. So we're a synthesis of those five kingdoms of nature. And we also span the full spectrum of consciousness from unconsciousness through semi-consciousness, through dream, to awakening, to full God realization. We're that full spectrum. And we can park our consciousness and hunker down at any level. And, you know, the tendency in anything in the material world is to solidify and to harden and freeze in that state. You know, everything tries to preserve form in the lower levels. So, usually, in fact, always, at the time that there's a major change of consciousness, the earth itself starts to get more active. That's why we're having a greater increase in earth change events. It's always part of that changing of the cycle. The earth itself is in taking new energies, and whenever you intake any kind of new energy, you have to expand, you have to release, you have to step into a new level. You have to integrate that new level, and you have to learn how to function within that new paradigm. So the earth is an evolving spiritual being, just like each of us on this planet. And so we're all in that process of expanding awareness. And just like our body has lots and lots of cells that make up our mini-universe that we wear as our physical body and our different subtle bodies. The earth also is made up of all of these cells, some of which are us. You might say that we're like the consciousness cells or the units of awareness that comprise the earth's spiritual or soul body. So all of that being said, we're all part of this process and everything is fine. Nothing is going awry. All of the dreadful stories and all the kerfluffle going on out there in the world are simply egos trying to control outcome, but they're also at a higher level souls trying to get the personalities to come into congruency with love and working together in cooperation instead of competition. It's the time to quit having a mean-spiritedness towards any other race, creed, color, culture, person, nation, mindset. And we are to come together as a family of nations and move from warfare to debating and communicating and venting our differences in a safe space with ground rules and moving together to find ways take care of our planet and our humanity, our family, so that poverty and disease and all of these things that need not be can truly be eradicated from this planet, and that would be the golden age. And that was one of the things that Sai Baba has come to assure and to inaugurate and to anchor as the golden age. And so he has anchored it fully and beautifully in Prashanti Nilayam and in outposts throughout the entire planet. But most of all, he has anchored it within each one of our hearts. Those of us, like myself, have been blessed to spend years with him and have physical interaction and interviews with him. And those who are benefiting by those few of us that have had that experience, which now transmit that vibration through our writing, through our speaking, through our work, through these radio shows, through these different venues, you are receiving that energy because we have become outlets and conduits of it in on his behalf or his extensions. So we can all be extensions of that divine stepping down of the golden age vision. Wherever we live, wherever we inhabit, we can begin to awaken our awareness to a greater dimension of goodwill, of loving, of cooperation, of sharing. I mean, start it in your own family. Practice active goodwill, active kindness, active cooperation, active forgiveness. The very things that you would like to see more on the earth in terms of how the nations get along with each other and the bigger picture unfolds, you have to start it in your own heart first. Be at peace in your own self with your own beingness and import it into your household and into your family. That's where it expands from there. And we all have been given this divine commission to do that. We are all exactly where we need to be to best fulfill our soul's commitment, our mission. Nothing is lacking. Everything is fine. I've come back in time from the future, and I can assure you we're going to make it just fine. Earth is in a time lag, which means that golden age has already dawned. Prema Sai Baba is already present. Everything is flowing in love and joy. There's no more crime, no more poverty, no more hunger. The golden age is present. So, we now, Baba says that we need to be patient with whatever it takes to work through those mental karmic scenarios that people are still working out, that we can see on the news, we can see, you know, things going on. I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to it myself if I were you, unless that's your job, because the less energy you put into the dying system and its death throes, the better. It's best for you to keep your attention on where we're going. Begin to see that people just lose interest in fighting and killing and destroying. They just lose interest in it. See them putting down their bombs and their guns and everything, and they're just reaching out to the people that they hated before and hugging them. And see them put their arms around each other, and they're starting to fellowship and eat in each other's houses, and now they're planning to come together, and they're starting projects to feed people, to grow flowers, to take care of the ecosystems, to devise beautiful new forms of city planning, to be able to tap the energies of the sun and the earth energies herself for free energy devices, and just see everybody beginning to share. Let's move the world into a planet where we don't need politicians. We have governing councils that are local, like we do in our planets, our higher planets. We don't have money because everything is created and shared equally as one family. That's the higher way of life that we can adopt from Venus. Venus is like the soul of Earth. So the more Earth moves into alignment with her soul and congruency with her soul, which would be Venus, the more we're going to see these beautiful things proliferate on the planet. You know, when the Earth transcends her ego, which is, you know, the ego is selfish and self-serving and doesn't care about taking care of the others. So let's advance the Earth into greater heart opening and congruency with her soul. Nobody ever talks about that. But esoterically speaking, that's what's happening. When we move into the higher dimension that you call ascension, it's simply the soul of the Earth coming into greater alignment with her lower vehicle of manifestation, which would be the Earth. So these are things that we need to be more aware of. We need to quicken those visions and contemplate them. And don't spend so much time worrying about who's going to be in, the president, this and that and the other thing. The whole thing's rigged anyway. It doesn't matter. But behind all of that, beyond all of the shenanigans, God wins. God prevails. God is in charge. Not a single thing happens that it isn't part of the will of God. That's what Sai Baba says, and I believe him. So, you are right where you need to be with the level of awareness that you need to have, but don't be complacent. Keep churning. Keep expanding. Keep moving your awareness to whatever is next. Some of you may, in fact, already be self-realized. You may have attained that state in the previous birth or even this time around, and this awareness may still be hidden from your conscious realization for several reasons. Number one, you may still have certain experiences that you have wanted to have, but if you were more aware and awake, you couldn't still have those experiences. You may be in certain relationships or desire to have certain relationships, which if you were more aware, you wouldn't even think twice about them. You may have commitments in time and space or karmic unfinished business to attend to, things to fulfill, and things that you really want as a soul to work through because you need the lesson of that experience. So that would keep you just this side of full recognition. Or, number two, you may need to be able to function and remain grounded to fulfill and serve your mission or the service that you've agreed to take on, which if you were more awake, you couldn't fulfill it. You need a certain amount of belief and separation and identity and ego in order to function in the world, because the world is, egos. What it is. It's all about ego scenarios. So number three, if you were more awakened, in some instances, you wouldn't be able to remain in the physical body. Or if you did, you'd be incapable of functioning in your usual current life if you fully awakened now. You got to, again, trust that whatever you need is at hand. And number four, the exact time for your full God realization may not have arrived yet for all of the aforementioned reasons, but also because divine realization is always in God's hands. It's God's gift. It's God's coup de grace. We cannot cause it to happen. We cannot make it happen from our human, mental, yogic, spiritual efforts. The best we can do is to prepare ourselves through faithful spiritual practice and self-discipline, and to put a ceiling on our desires, and then let the good times roll. when it's your time, you will awaken, and nothing can stop it, because it's God taking full awakening presence within you. And that's a God thing. It's something you don't have to worry about. So it's only the mind and its desires that block awareness. Only that. It's only the mind that ever entraps or seems to entrap us. We're not entrapped at all. We never have been. And the mind is entirely composed of desires. Now, desires for God are useful. So any desires that you have for God or to be greater love or greater service or greater purity or greater self-control, all of those are good desires, and they will lead you to God. They will help you on your spiritual path. So whatever is related to God or whatever is blessed in God's name is rendered pure. So that's the whole reason why it is so beneficial to bless your food before you eat it. Because the toxicity or the additives or whatever, the GMOs, all of that is transmuted when you bless the food in God's name. You know, it's so sweet in India. They bless everything. Everything. Everything is blessed and dedicated to God before it's used. The new home, the car, the new farm implements, even the seeds to be planted, even the cow to be milked, and even the milk. What an easy way to keep God uppermost in your thoughts. By blessing and dedicating everything in your life to God. Your day, your work, your activities. And you know, even when you go to walk your dog, even your evening out, make blessing your new life's habit. And watch, you know, put a feeling on those thoughts and wishes and hopes and expectations and yearnings and ambitions and sensual desires and all of those things, because if you have a desire that is connected to the earth, that requires another lifetime on earth for you to expiate that desire. So find another way to expiate those desires. And the best thing is to offer them to the Lord and ask the Lord to give you that pure heart, that pure consciousness, that pure mind that was in Christ Jesus. And give your mind and all of it to Sai Baba. And take from him bliss. That's what he wants you to do. Give him your baggage and take from him bliss. So that's your direct prescription. Give your burden to Baba and take from Baba bliss. And bliss, beloved, is divine awareness. And, you know, it's such a loving, simple, sweet life when you just put God in the center of everything and develop that internal dialogue. And, yes, that soft, sweet voice, that response, that's the Lord. We all have conversations with God all the time. We just don't really stop to acknowledge, oh, I just had my answer when I asked that question. Wow. Well, did you think he didn't hear you? The Lord hears you. And when you speak to the Lord really likes to talk to you and speak in return. And you will definitely hear your answer in the sweetest little intuitive thoughts that just drop in your mind. It's not like channeling some entity. No, not like that. It's your own awareness that rises to the surface with the knowing that you need in response to your inquiry. So let's go out chanting. Let's do Om Sai Ram tonight, shall we? Deep breath. Om Sai Ram. And the name of God as Ram is very, very good for purifying the mind. So Ramanam is the best mantra to quiet that beast of the mind. So God bless you, and God willing, I'll be with you this time next week. Adonai.